Hey, everybody. We're back with another commissioned podcast, this time from the singular Julie Webster. Actually, she's the doubler because this is her second commissioned podcast. If you'll recall, a while back, she commissioned the mind-blowing teeth.
I do recall.
About a woman with chompers in her yoo-hoo.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun one to watch, pretty fun one to podcast.
It's a story of childhood trauma resulting in physical dysmorphia, I guess. I don't know.
So she's got another good, I'm not going to say good or bad yet because we haven't got to that point, but she's got another movie, another kind of a twisted one.
Okay.
This is The Voices, which I had never heard of,
mm.
but it stars Ryan Reynolds and Anna Kendrick, and it's directed by, Marjan Satrapi, who in 2008 was an Academy Award winner for an animated film that she made based on a graphic novel of her life growing up in post-revolutionary Iran. So there's
Persepolis?
Persepolis. This movie had a decent pedigree, but when I did some research into it, the studio got it, looked at it, and decided to give it a one-week release in L.A., and New York City, and then dumped it.
Yeah.
And you can actually get, if you are an Amazon Prime member, you can stream it for free. And
it was on Netflix. It's been in my Netflix queue forever. I don't know if it's still up there.
Holy shit, because I actually searched for it on Netflix first. It's always my go-to.
It might not be there now, yeah.
Oh, but yeah, like it's definitely streaming for free, for quote-unquote free on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this movie?
I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good.
I was shocked at how entertaining I found it.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I guess you'd call this a horror comedy.
Yep. There's a lot of dark comedy
in it. Black humor, but a lot of, interesting things. The one thing I don't like about the film is the very end, which we can talk about.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
Okay. I thought felt like it's almost like the filmmakers didn't know what they had.
Mm-hmm.
And decided to shove the stick into the humor direction, and it just felt, my bugaboo is tonal shifts, and this movie's replete with shifts of tone.
But they make sense in the context.
They make
of the
sense
film.
In the universe, yeah. But at the end, I felt like it's almost like when you see a precocious person. And they're talking and they're stating opinions, but then they laugh. Artificially after everything they say, almost mm-hmm. don't take what I'm saying serious. I think we should all end world hunger. just stop laughing. Have the confidence in what you're saying. And I felt like this was an artificial, fakey, social, maladjusted laugh at the end of what turned into mm-hmm. a pretty serious and thought-provoking and gripping little drama.
Yeah, that's the thing I found most interesting about this is...
Let's not spoil it just yet, because
I'm not talking about the end.
I'm trying to encourage people to watch, because I had never, ever heard of this. With the profile it had, that's surprising to me.
Well, yeah, so that's the thing I found most interesting is I thought going in, this thing was just going to be a serial killer romp.
Right.
I thought this was going to just be
Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, essentially.
Yeah. Going around killing people. And it turned into something with a much, much more of a heart to it. Much more of a serious look at mental illness in some ways.
Sure.
Now, it's not everyone's brand of mental illness, right? It's not
I
don't know how well it maps to reality.
Exactly.
But there is something if you look at this situation, it does lend some sort of humanity to the whole idea of insanity. And I only say that because it rhymed.
Right.
Mental illness.
And I guess the other thing is I appreciate it at some point, the line between mental, quote, health and mentally unhealthy is pretty fucking fine.
Sure. Yeah.
Because everyone can identify with an inner critic and a voice that's running you down and telling you, almost everybody. I'm sure there's those golden people out there that, fucking wake up and they feel great every morning and
mm-hmm.
they're beautiful and they're sexy and they're rich and they're famous and they're powerful and nothing ever doesn't go their way.
Right.
But yeah, there's this particular scene that we'll probably talk about where I'm like, shit, I am standing at a hair's breadth. From I'm a couple of bad months away and lack of access to a therapist from now, obviously I don't think I would run around, but I don't think I'd run around killing people, but suffering from crippling depression is certainly on the table.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, getting an addiction is certainly on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. Do you want I guess we should, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let Julie introduce this.
Okay, one more thing, though.
We can go wild.
This movie is just fucked. Like, there's this line between, like, candy bubblegum movie and, like, fucked up weird dark humor,
yeah,
that, like, pushes it over the edge for me. And this movie is just beyond that.
This movie,
I loved the tone it struck with the fucked up humor.
This movie feels like if Wes Anderson had directed Antichrist.
Okay. That's, you know, not a bad comparison. Yeah.
And I will say that it is fucked and there is some uncomfortable shit. And this movie seems very polarizing because when I was reading reviews, it's like a 70% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, but the people that hated it really fucking hated it. If you're having a bad week or you don't feel good about yourself like it's not something that is super sensitive or gives a particular shit about feelings of the victims, and if that's gonna bother you, then maybe give it a pass. But if you're feeling strong, if you're feeling secure in your position of yourself in the world, then and also if you think that Ryan Reynolds is incapable of anything other than essentially a motor mouth, cocky
pretty boy
dickhole, yeah, this movie could change your mind.
Going Deadpool. See,
Dickhole is the sequel.
right, Dickhole, Deadpool 2. Everything else I've seen him in, though, he plays like this just bland, generic pretty boy kind of guy.
Oh, really? Because I associate him with like super cocky asshole.
He does play that. Like his Van Wilder character, I guess, is
exactly,
that.
Yeah.
But like a lot of the romantic comedy stuff he does, he's just generic nice guy,
true,
pretty boy.
But I didn't know that
I've
he had
him
this,
other stuff too.
I didn't know he had this gear in him.
Yeah, I did. I've seen him do, like, there's one where he's buried alive. It might be called Buried Alive.
Really?
I can't remember. Yeah, and he's gotta try and get out of this coffin, and he's got like a cell phone. And it's real interesting. So he can do other things.
Like I said, I like Ryan. I think there's you got to have
some people hate him, though.
I know, but I mean, but I think the world needs some sturdy, good looking guys who can, you know, cock their eyebrow and say a quip. Like that is a role that needs to be the done. Who's that one? The Frasier guy that is in The Mummy, and
Frasier
George
guy
of the Jungle. He's kind of
Frasier guy.
Isn't that thick?
Oh, Brendan Fraser. I thought you meant from the
Frasier. Brendan Fraser. Like, he's the guy that, like, almost was the guy, but then he kind of cratered and fell. And, you know, Ryan Reynolds, you know, he had a couple missteps there with RIPD and Green Lantern where he could have gone the same route.
Jesus,
but
yeah.
This, I hadn't seen the Buried Alive one. This movie kind of changed my mind of what this guy's ceiling could be. And also, I think it behooves a guy. It speaks well of a guy who has made a lot of money and a lot of big budget shit to do something like this that's just risky as hell.
Yeah, I read one review that said, you know, Ryan Reynolds is having a bit of a renaissance and he has stopped He has stopped accepting roles that are designed to make him a star and just has accepted roles that he likes now.
Yeah.
And I think that's always a good idea for actors.
Even Julie herself had discovered this movie from sheer accident. I'm going to get to her thoughts, and then we can tear into this movie.
Okay.
While Teeth is purely for my own enjoyment and to make you guys uncomfortable, this one I picked because I thought the movie was truly fascinating. I love that this whole movie was basically from the POV of a violently mentally ill guy. It tries to give you an idea of what a lot of people... or why a lot of people that require medication don't like it and go right back off it again.
Mm-hmm.
How they may see the world and how it truly is to the rest of us. You can even see glimpses of how hoarders live the lives they do and be totally oblivious to what everyone else is experiencing. And his bond with his mother, wow. I found this movie because I was searching for Ryan Reynolds to find his movie Buried. There you go.
Okay, cool.
But this one popped up instead. I noticed that Anna Kendrick in it, so I'm wondering why it didn't get a lot of press. Never heard a peep about it, but perhaps it was only marketed in the States. No, it didn't, and it does seem like the studio just had a crisis of confidence. This movie was made in the can for like 18 months before Lionsgate got it and gave it its release, but it just seemed like they looked at it. And I can see a bunch of Hollywood suits. Oh, Anna Kendrick and Ryan Reynolds, this is going to be fun. And this Iranian girl who's gotten some press. Yeah, and then they look at it and they're just like stink face.
Yeah.
Like, who the hell is going to see this movie about a comedic version of Dexter?
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen, man. Like, and the credits are fucked, and, like, you start out. So let's talk about the movie proper. If you think you might see this movie, and Jim says you can stream it for Netflix. If not, you got a Amazon Prime account.
Like I said, I don't think you can now, but.
Yeah, it's available there. But I think you should. If it sounds like this is something up your alley, or you don't think Ryan Reynolds can act, then check it out, because we're about to spoil it. I thought this scene, I really loved, like, all the stuff in the toilet factory, the Milton factory, where they had the bright pink suits and like the almost choreographed ballets with the forklifts and stuff. And I read a review that actually infuriated me, because they thought all this stuff was just like these kitschy little biting off of Wes Anderson touches. And I think that you have to be pretty fucking obtuse to not realize this is his fantasy way of seeing the world that is in throughout the entire movie.
He's working a job that everybody else knows is a shit job.
Yeah.
They don't want to be doing it, but he's blazed out of his fucking mind on these meds. He's good to go.
No, he's not blazed out of his mind.
He's not blazed out of his mind on these meds at this point. So he's seeing this fantasy world that he's constructed in his mind that's great.
Right.
No problem.
Yeah, man. And so where, I guess, when did you kind of like sit up a little bit straighter and start taking, because I was like, I think it was when he accidentally killed the first girl.
It was the deer.
When
the deer came through the window, yeah.
Yes. And like, I'm like, I thought it was already pretty fucked.
It was just so fucking, it was expected, and I was like, oh, okay, he's not looking at the road, something bad's going to happen.
I thought he might run
here.
Over a person. And,
and it had actually subverted my expectations a couple times at this point, because I expected, you know, him to either accidentally run her over, like as she was going to her car, or something like that, and it never did that. And then when she got in the car, when that deer comes through the window, and it started talking, I was like, all right, okay, this is fucked up and I'm in.
Well, and that's the thing, like, because I kept on thinking it'd be a different movie. Like, oh, this is going to be about the guy who's a little challenged and he's a little slow, or he's a little socially awkward, but he's going to get the girl, and he's probably not going to get the one girl, but he's going to, you know, he's got a real shot at Anna Kendrick. Anna Kendrick seems like she's tuned into his wavelength.
Right.
And then it turns into, like,
and
this,
it does turn into that.
It does.
And then it goes
the
other
winning way.
He's
actually succeeding despite himself. And
this is like a psychopath put into a rom-com.
Right. And then, like, when the deer starts talking to him and asks it to mercy kill, and he slits its throat in front of this girl.
Right.
Then things get really crazy. And then when he comes after her with the knife and trips and accidentally stabs her and then mercy kills her, then you go and like, oh my God, what's he going to do? And then you see him go into the hardware store and getting like
saws for days.
Saws and Tupperware containers, like 100 different Tupperware containers. Like, oh.
Right.
Oh. And then, you see him slowly, methodically dismember and stuff into these little freezer boxes this girl, and then put her head in the fridge. And I started thinking, like, is this how the Jeffrey Dahmer got started?
Right. Right. It obviously, yeah, it evokes that. I imagine. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's similar. I'm sure it's not exact, but.
And he has a one head in a freezer, and they start talking to him, and they need a friend, and.
Maybe.
I don't. And I thought the interesting how it's probably typecasting, but the cat. He lives with a cat, Mr. Whiskers, and a dog.
Yeah.
Rufus?
I don't.
The dog
know.
Has a big, dumb dog name.
Yeah.
Because it's a big dumb dog, but the cat is like the evil psychopath on his shoulder, and the dog, and they're all voiced by Ryan Reynolds, by the way.
Yeah, which I could tell immediately, and I don't think the voices are particularly good.
Oh,
but
see, I thought the cat was really pretty. I mean, I knew they're Ryan Reynolds, but I thought they were pretty funny, and also it fitting that I guess the voices are coming from inside his head.
Sure, absolutely, thematically it makes sense.
But yeah, it's the dog is the lovable one, and like I felt like. It generated some genuine emotion at the end of the movie where the dog essentially says, no, I'm wrong. I was wrong. You're a bad boy.
Right. Yeah.
And you need
even his own inner voice is telling him now both sides of it are like, there's no more struggle anymore.
Yeah.
You're bad.
So at what point, like, this goes back because I've had the frustrating experience of having a very close friend who was bipolar and for the longest time refused to take medication.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everything would be, like, hunky-dory for 3 to 6 months, and then something would fucking happen. And, you know, then it was always the crash and dealing with the pieces. And you like, you know, I remember talking, this guy's name is Bill. I remember talking to Bill and being like, you know, after the latest episode, it's like, dude, why the fuck can't you, I mean, do not see like just how destructive this is and how you're going to, you're going to kill yourself one of these days in doing one of these crazy things. And he's like, the medicine just like makes me feel like I'm not even really alive. Mm-hmm. You know, like the highs when he's under like the mania side are like almost worth the incredible lows and like the self-destructive behavior, because like he was an artist and he couldn't make art when he was, you know, and then the drugs made him fat and killed the sex drive. And like it, you know, it's almost like, what do you do if you have a person that's a danger to themselves and society, but if they take medicine, they feel like killing themselves?
No, it's a fair question. And it's interesting, too, when you look at, like you said, he was an artist. A lot of the great artists of you know, reality have mental issues. A lot of them kill themselves. A lot of them struggle with depression and
alcohol,
all those sorts
and drug
of things.
Addiction.
Abuses, right. Like, that's that. There's, I could see where if you turn off the things that make you super creative, you might feel like a life isn't worth living.
Right.
And in this case, it wasn't necessarily that, but he felt extraordinarily lonely. You know, like that was the thing that drove him to, I guess, do all the things that he did, is the loneliness. Right. He had no friends. His own mother decided she would rather kill herself than be with him.
Well, that's the other thing, is that mental illness, you know, there is a genetic component to that. I'm not sure.
It was in the movie. Yeah.
I kind of made friends with this psychologist down the street. And like, I should have pulled her in like, hey, Teresa, watch this movie and then come in for an interview, because she indicated she might be down for that, because I mentioned, because she deals specifically with treating PTSD and especially like vets and police mm-hmm. officers and first responders and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh man, we talk about that shit all the time on the Walking Dead podcast. Maybe we can get you on sometime. I would mm-hmm. like to hear what a professional has to say, because you know, it's not just that he was dealing with the loneliness and like the genetic, you know, the fact that his mom had the same kind of issues, but the fact that like his mental illness allowed him to overlook a lot of shitty aspects of his life, like the fact that he's working at a toilet factory. Mm-hmm. And it's not this colorful experience where these swirling patterns, and he lives in a house that's not even a house. He lives in an abandoned bowling alley,
right?
That's not bright and airy and ill-lit. There's like,
sure,
you know, animals confined and suffering, and he's not keeping up on the housework. And like, that's the thing, like when Julie's talking about how you get a glimpse into like how hoarders start, mm-hmm. is that like, do they just not see the squalor?
Maybe.
And like, plus you've got two
they have a fundamentally different relationship to it. That's for sure.
It's not just that you've got two factors. The fact that like they're not seeing the world accurately, and also it's the boiling frog effect. Like, it's not like they woke up one day and holy shit, this whole room is just covered in feces and garbage. It's like a little bit, and like every time is like a line. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like me when I say, hey, I'm gonna go on a diet tomorrow, and then I decide to pig out. And it's, you know, the line, it's easy to move that line just a little bit more. And like, well, okay, if it gets beyond this, and you just like, oh, I'll just shut the door and never go in this room. But that's the thing, like when he went off med, or when he went on his meds, suddenly he could see,
right,
like the accuracy of his situation.
Yeah, he's choosing to live in the fantasy world versus, you know, living up to all the horrors that he's committed, and the horror that is his life, the loneliness, the just wretched living conditions, all of that.
And when you get to his backstory, which the review that I read infuriated, just was completely dismissive of, it's like, what other way could he go down? Like, I mean, like,
what do you mean?
You would need just the,
like,
the,
just killing, just indiscriminately murdering.
Mean, no, like his chance of a normal life, like with the genetics
and
the experience that he went through with his mother. Mm-hmm. I don't see how anyone walks out of that. Like, it's a Russian roulette kind of odd that you get out of that with any kind of normal life. I know people do.
Oh, sure. But
You know, there's some people that go through all kinds of crazy things. There's some people that fall apart at comparatively minor things. And, you know, how can you predict it? And how can some people survive and how can some people not? Like, I don't know, but like, I just remember thinking, like, what is the overall lesson in this movie? Because like, even if it's like, oh, we need better mental health in the country, well, what if people don't want to take their medicine?
Sure.
Like, you know, one of the fundamental dystopian future components of like fiction is the fact that like the state is forcing you on antidepressants and antipsychotics and stuff, and nobody
wants
that.
Need to incentivize it. Don't need to force it. You need to incentivize it.
How do you incentivize someone to live with their shitty life?
By doing things for them that make their lives not so shitty.
Yeah, because the thing is, so the other thing when I was thinking about this movie last night is, we know how colorful and bright his mental situation made his job and like his bowling alley existence and his talking with his friends. There's a lot of indications in the movie where people aren't as friendly to him as they seem to be. Like, because it seems to be in the very, like, the first 30 minutes of the movie that everyone is pretty much broadly supportive. Like, you could see a little bit of, like, how the women were, like, kind of secretly repulsed by him or, like, thought he was creepy, but, like, not nearly as much as you would think given his situation. And I wonder if, like, we're supposed to understand that people actually were kind of mean and mocking and a dick to him. And, like, whereas if we could find the generosity to embrace people like this, maybe, but that's hard to do, man.
Yeah, well, I was wondering because like the first woman he kills, whose name I can't remember, I don't remember any of the names of in this movie,
right?
Period.
Jerry, like, Jerry's the one.
Is that Ryan Reynolds?
Jerry's Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
Yep. Fiona,
yeah, the first one he kills, she seemed to only be nice to him or interested in him when she was intoxicated. And I don't know if that's something they were trying to say or if they were showing, like, maybe his fantasized view of it at times. Like, oh, she's so nice to me. She's dancing with me. Like, I read that as, oh, she's smashed at the company party. Oh, she's smashed after the karaoke night.
Sure.
Now she's going to be super nice to him. Whereas in the office, she's always like, fuck that guy. I'm ducking under my desk so I don't have to see him.
See, I read it that they all had this preconception he's a weirdo. And then when she ditched him for the date and then she got locked or, you know, she's caught in the rain. And I like how they filmed that as like a serial killer, kind of like a stalker, like a scary movie. And then it turned out to not be. And then, whoa, surprise, it was.
Yeah.
Then when he picked him up and he was like not like a dick about it, just like, you know, really cool. She's like, oh, you know, because I imagine a lot of dudes you pull that shit on and they'd be like, fuck you, bitch. And, you know, like I just hear how women's experiences on online dating sites go. And the fact that he was really chill about it and wasn't like holding a grudge or anything, I think genuinely impressed her. And she's like, okay.
Think so?
I mean, because plus he's Ryan Reynolds, so he's baseline hot,
right?
Nice body.
Yeah.
If he in, you know, he's a creep, but then she's like, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe because I think everybody in their life sometimes confronts a situation where like, man, maybe I'm being a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm being like a fucking elitist dick, and I should give this person more of a chance. But that's the other problem I was going to get to is like, I know because I've had probably more than the usual run-ins with people that have mental problems. Growing up in a cult, replete with people with mental problems. And I try to be a kind and generous soul. Like there's a really disturbed person in our apartment complex that like, it was exhausting. Just having a conversation, like every single time, like he would come up to me multiple times a day and start talking about the same fucking thing. Yeah. Like I, you know, and like, you know, creeping out my son and creeping out my girlfriend. It's like, I realize how few resources there are for people in society. Like, and it's so much easier just to shut that shit out and just like ignore it and it magically goes away. So,
and you know, it, for some reason, seeking any kind of mental health and mental help in some ways is viewed as an admission of weakness or something to be looked down upon, right? Whereas, like, you go to a doctor with a broken leg and say, fix me up, doc.
Yeah.
Nobody bats an eye at that. That's the thing you do.
Right.
But if you go see a psychiatrist, people are like, oh, why is he seeing a psychiatrist? What can he deal with?
There is still quite a bit of stigma amongst, you know, getting mental health. I think that's getting better.
It is, but...
But the big problem is when you have a guy like this Ryan Reynolds character, like Jerry, whose parents are gone, and had terrible parents even when they were around and been putting the system, like the people that are mentally ill and have strong support networks, you don't hear about because they're not a problem because they're getting the support they need. It's always the people that are slipping through the cracks. And it seems like, and I'm going to try to say this as bluntly as possible just to identify the problem, is in those situations, you have to really care about someone to give them the help and the support they need because it is exhausting. Mm-hmm. But you got a situation where a person has no friends and family because their family were either mentally ill themselves or maybe they're a drug addict and they got in the system and they've turned into these very uncomfortable to deal with people, and you're asking total fucking strangers out of the goodness of their heart, which, you know, amazingly, there are people like that out in the world. But is that something you can sustain? And are there enough of those people that can make a big difference in some of these people's lives? I mean, you're talking about, you know, I'm not saying anything new about the percentage of homeless people that are also mentally ill and how those behaviors and ways of thinking prevent them from, you know, I don't know. Like, it's – that's the thing about this movie. It made me think about a lot of that stuff, and there aren't any really great answers.
Yeah.
And, you know, also vanishingly small amount of people that are actually so disturbed that they actually hurt other people.
Sure.
I almost wondered if that was going too far into, like, sensationalism and stigmatism. Like, hey, if you do befriend the weird loner at work, he might fucking kill you. You know?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are people out there like that. I mean, yeah. It's not uncommon to hear of serial killers. It happens. So, like... I don't like if you want to say that this is an example of every single mentally ill person, I think you're wrong. I think you're dead wrong.
It's almost like
this is a specific instance of it.
This is like, and I know they've actually done this with a Halloween, but this is like if you got to see Michael Myers from his perspective.
Okay. Yeah.
Like he's not obviously can't be the bad guy in his life, right? He's got to be doing things in his head that make sense because, you know, people aren't cartoon villains.
Actually, the remake of Halloween does a pretty good job of that.
I just watched that last year and I just thought it was dreck, man.
Oh, I loved it.
Like, it's like, yeah, it's like I get it. He's got a really fucked up upbringing and whatnot. But yeah, like, but this, I guess, was a little bit more accessible because even then it was an external portrait of what's going on. It wasn't from his perspective, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas Ryan Reynolds, you know, he's talking to these severed heads and everything's beautiful. And
right.
I thought that was pretty effective at sucking him in.
Yeah, that's just one of the things that annoys me when people look at a movie and they say, This doesn't work when generalized. Well, no fucking shit, it doesn't. This is a singular story.
Right.
Don't get on your high horse too much here.
Right.
Maybe cut it some slack and take it for what it is.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you wanted it to be. And
right.
I think if it would be unwise to extend this portrayal of a mentally ill person to A, anyone in real life probably, or B, specifically like all of the mentally ill people out there.
Yeah, and I think it's like there's very little danger of that since this is such a niche film. But I'm wondering if this movie made $350 million in America, I guarantee there'd be pieces written by people who were mentally ill and hurt by the depiction of them. And like this is going to essentially make the problem worse because that's the thing. Like I feel like a lot of this stuff, like it's like, oh, it raises awareness. Well, sometimes it's the wrong kind of awareness.
And I don't know if this is, though. I think it might – like if you take an actual look at what the film is trying to say, it's – it's a sympathetic message. It's not just this crazy killer on the loose.
So that's why. So I've been through years of therapy to overcome the issues I got, you know, from growing up in a cult and having your parents abandon you and all the various shit that I've gone through.
Yeah.
And one of the things I appreciate or I came to understand is the reason like group therapy is so effective is because knowing that. A lot of times when you're depressed or you're feeling hurt or you're bad, you internalize, you think I'm the only one that's going through this. Like I'm just this unbelievable fuck up.
Right.
And hearing other people talk about the exact same thoughts and feelings you're going through, which is why I thought that scene where the therapist was held at knife point.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, essentially, I need you to fix me. We need rapid therapy right now. And like it's funny because like, and I had a couple of different therapists I didn't click with, but the one that I stuck with and he helped me a lot, he was incredible because I actually had a session that it wasn't exactly the same problem, but he like like three or four sessions in, he at the end of it, he sat down and like just insightfully said, these are the things you're going through, and these are the things that you're thinking, and these are what I want you to focus in. And like I just felt like I had a raw, like, holy shit, like this is like I can roll up my sleeves and go, this is an actionable list. This isn't just me talking about like, yeah, I know my childhood's fucked up. I went through it.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's kind of shameful to talk about and it feels good to get out of the chest, but like, you know, what exactly is the damage inflicted and how do I go about fixing it? And like, I feel like a good therapist or a good psychiatrist, and maybe you need a lot, you know, seems like maybe you need both because therapists can't prescribe drugs.
right, sure. Yeah.
But it seems like a good one can do that for you. And it's too bad because I feel like he had the breakthrough. Like, what if he had that breakthrough a year ago, you know? And like, also, okay. why didn't she
or even a week ago, right?
Like, yeah, before, like, where he got back to, like, the where did that come from? Like, because, like, again, it's like they made it seem like it's almost like she was just pulling this out of her ass, but I'm like, to me, having worked with some good therapists, I feel like that's kind of like what a good therapist does, because that's the thing, like, people aren't unique, you know, like everyone's circumstances and individual experiences, the details are different, but like, you know, just like there's only like six basic stories you can tell, there's not that many ranges in human emotion. People are betrayed, people are neglected, people are walled off, like, you know, and there's ways you can fix that and reprogram your wetware.
Sure.
I thought that was simultaneously shown as like almost a preposterous thing and also like something that, like, yeah, actually that's the way it should work. Like, you shouldn't be going to someone for a year and make zero progress. Either the therapist is shitty or you're not putting in work.
Okay.
One of those two things is, and maybe you need, I don't know, maybe you need some drugs to support you, because that's the other, it seems like a crucial thing. You need the initial work is so hard that you need something to help you out, especially if your brain is entrenched in certain biochemical patterns. You need something to jumpstart it out of that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's kind of like, you know, your broken leg example. Like, yeah, the doctor fucking sets your bone, but he also gives you some Vicodin.
Right.
Because good luck with having a fucking broken bone in your body not hurting.
Sure, you can physically heal just fine without it.
Yeah, but you don't. But, you know, are you going to do as quickly? Are you going to have as much success? Are you going to get as much sleep?
Is a broken leg healing without any pain medication going to cause you to kill? Maybe. Might cause me to kill.
Sure.
What do you think of Jackie Weaver in this? The mom from Animal Kingdom.
So she's from Animal Kingdom. Oh shit!
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
She's,
a totally different role here, right? Like Animal Kingdom, she's like super manipulative and like just evil to the core. And here, she's playing someone who.
She's also in Silver Linings Playbook, but also isn't she Hannah's mom from Girls? No, she's not. That's a different person. Holy shit!
That's a different person.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, she's totally different in this.
Yeah, she's a quote-unquote good person in this film.
Yeah.
Trying to do good work. No, I thought she's really good and exactly what you needed to be. I thought that Anna Kendrick was pretty good. You understand why she kind of got into relationship with Ryan. And I saw the way they showed, like, the fact that she, you know, when he took her to his childhood home, gonna fucking kill her.
Yeah.
And she had no idea she was navigate. They do that in, like, there's like, I think Red Dragon, that's the one where Lord Voldemort does the
Hannibal Lecter
in the Hannibal Lecter universe. Yeah. But there's a situation like that too where, like, this woman is being put on an audition for her life. And, you know, essentially she's going to stand in for the guilt or innocence of all women everywhere, going back to his mother, right? But that's why Anna Kendrick was essentially being judged, and based on her reaction, and she could have had a perfectly natural reaction that would have gotten her killed. But because of luck and compassion on her part, she didn't avoid being killed, unfortunately.
No, in that moment she did.
But she did in that moment. Yeah.
I actually really, really like the flashback scene. That one there, I think the one with the father was a little overdone. It was a little much with his mother standing behind in the spotlight and, like, watching from a distance as his father shakes him and says,
Oh,
essentially, act like a man.
Right.
His Godfather moment.
I feel like you had to have both sides of that. You had to show the, like, you know, the active trauma and the passive trauma.
I just wish they had filmed it a little differently on that first one. But the second flashback really worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was amazing how much sorrow and loneliness they conveyed in, like, just a couple of minutes of flashback. It was really good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, this thing's tone, like, it's got, like, I laughed out loud a couple of times. And then even in some of the grisly murder stuff, it's still kind of not exactly slapstick, but definitely like, oh wow, this is like uncomfortable funny and like black comedy funny. But then you're right, then that third act, there was some stuff where I really felt bad for the guy, because I'm like, shit man, I don't know what you were supposed to do. You were like fucked from the time you popped out of this woman's vagina.
Yeah,
you had no shot. You had a one in a million shot, and you didn't have Han Solo helping you out. So I don't know.
So let's talk real quick about like the dog and the cat.
Okay.
Because we mentioned briefly like what their role was, but like it made a lot of sense that these roles were embodied within the dog and the cat, because the cat obviously being predator, and you can see this in the scenes where they're watching TV. You know, apparently he likes to see hogs fuck. I don't know what that's all about, but
yeah.
But then he likes to see, you know, the gazelle or the zebra. What was it? Being killed by the lion,
right?
He's a predator, right? Mm-hmm. That's the voice he's going to have, is the one telling him to kill. The dog, man's best friend. He doesn't want him to kill anybody. Mm-hmm. He just wants him to be friendly.
It's everyone to get along. Yeah. And also, I want to shout out the acting of the animals.
Okay.
Like, I mean, you know, that's... But
the CG acting, yeah.
I always think it's amazing, like, when I saw the first Babe, and they're like, oh, wow, they actually are getting performances out of these animals, and they spend a lot of time, like, figuring out how to do that. Like, there's this one scene where the mother dog is having her puppies taken from her, and this dog is just looking like it's really emoting the shit out of being sad and, like, not understanding what's going on and why is this happening to me. And the director, I was listening to the commentary, and he's like, the way the handler got that is he had strips of bacon that he slowly pulled out of his pocket and just stood there. And the dog was just, like, going through this, like...
a range.
The feelings over bacon. But it was, like, I was reading it as this mother having her children wrenched from her. And I think that's a cool... Like that cat, like, really legit emotes being pissed.
Sometimes,
being a bastard. And the dog less so. But I was, like, just amazed at, like... You know, because you can just have the CG guys, like, you know, make their mouths do whatever. But to get the moments where the animals are kind of naturally in that state, I thought was pretty cool.
They had to bring in the effects guys from Look Who's Talking.
The movie looked, I mean, I don't know what the budget was, but the movie had a lot of money they spent on it in both just the staging of the practical, like, you know, Wes Anderson type toilet factory scenes and the CGI on the animals. And there was also, like, you know, animated butterflies. And
yeah,
what do you think about that? I thought that might have been gilding the lily a bit. Like, for him to totally go into Bluebird on my shoulder
It would have easily been enough for it to just be sunny and clean. To have actual, like, butterflies flying around was a little silly, but a lot of stuff in this movie is a little silly. Speaking of a little silly, the Elvis impersonator.
The Asian karaoke.
So this is one of the sections of the movie that didn't work for me.
Okay.
I actually didn't like the cutting back and forth between her night out and his night out.
Oh, really? Why not?
I just don't think it didn't do anything for me. Because his situation seemed so ridiculous and over the top. And I thought he was maybe actually having a good time watching it.
Oh, yeah, I think he did. Yeah, totally.
And therefore, like, wasn't really missing her that much. Like, I would have liked to see a sadder version of him being cut between.
Yeah, but I feel like that's true to life. Because when I think of, like, some of my friends that, you know, I always go back to Orfer.
Sure, yeah.
Like, he would sometimes understand that life was boning over, but not the way you or I would.
Right.
like, you know, it's so I do think that he, the same things that made him, you know, a psycho killer also insulated him a bit from the harsh and why he could be like kind of matter of fact about, well, yeah, you stood me up and yeah, I'm bummed out, but
yeah,
you know, I'm still going to want to help you out if you're stuck in the rain kind of deal.
And I still want to look at this Elvis impersonator also, with his dick. I don't know what the close up on that's for.
I don't know. And then how about, like, I'm pretty sure that the Bruce Lee guy, that's in his mind, right?
No, I think this is all happening.
No, I think that Elvis was legit. I think the Bruce Lee guy coming from the salad bar was...
Okay, you might be right.
And then I didn't think so when I was watching it, but, like, a little bit more in the movie, I'm like, oh, I get what they're doing.
And it does... The sign says, like, live Elvis impersonator or whatever tonight, not...
Doesn't say martial arts martial arts. But I also think the cutting back and forth... Because that's when the movie was still operating in this kind of like rom-com situation. I'm like, oh, the tragedy is she would have really had a good time at this place.
Oh, maybe so, yeah.
But she just can't conceive that this dork would like, and he's like, oh, I got a big, it's the greatest show in the earth. Like, she was essentially doing, I mean, she was having a lot of fun too.
Oh, yeah.
Out at night karaoke. But she would have, I think that's the point was, if she had gone with him, she would have had a really good time too. And, you know, juxtaposing his... being pleased with himself and still being kind of bummed and her having a good time and not even thinking about him, I thought was powerful in that and kind of necessary for the rom-com subversion to work. In fact, let me criticize this movie a bit because it's got two flaws, one that's like almost fatal and the other that I kind of wish that the title sequence didn't have a whole bunch of knives and like obvious allusions to people being butchered because, and I heard that like the promotional poster had the girl's head on the plat.
Yeah.
Like you could have really amped up the holy shit moments if you had sold the fact that this was a, your stereotypical rom-com and then had that stuff happen.
But then imagine the backlash.
The rug being... I don't know. The movie's strong enough to carry it off is what I think. The people that are going to be pissed about
seeing
it are going
to
be pissed
anyway. Seeing the visceral reactions to this movie, negative visceral reactions, I'm not... I think they would have been even worse had they done the old switcheroo on people.
All right. Well, it seems like we are going to be on the same page about the ending.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was shocked that they had... like, I think it should have just faded to black with him dying in the fire.
Yeah.
Him coming back and doing his singing and dancing musical number just, like, made me think that I had gotten the wrong idea and they had made a less thoughtful, interesting movie than I suspected. Like, what the fuck? This is so weird. This is how you end Ghostbusters.
Right. Almost retroactively made the movie worse somehow.
Yeah.
Like, everything I had seen up to then made less sense or was worth less because of this final
scene. Why do you think they did that? Do you think they're like, oh, man, we've gone too far into this tone and people are just going to be bummed out? But I kind of think you want to be bummed out. It should be a little bit of a tragic.
Yeah, though. I don't need a happy ending for this character.
I mean, the one guy's always had his back. The mental facade of his dog has rejected him on good reason. And like, that's the other thing is like, you know, I try to tell people they're suicidal, like, you know, you'll get better and there's, you know, you're you know, living is so much better and you're gonna live. But like with this particular person, like,
he's doing a lot of harm to other people.
Not only that, but like his best case scenario is life in prison or a mental institution
or a life on the pills, just entirely shut down.
No, he's going to do hard time. Like there's no fucking way.
Well, okay. At that point, yes.
Yeah. He's Jeffrey Dahmer. He might get beat to death in prison a couple of years later. Like I just like it's such a the time to intervene for him was so far back in the past. And that's the thing. Like, so I guess unless you've multiple killed people and put them in the refrigerator, still don't commit suicide.
Right,
if you have killed people and put them in the fridge and maybe burn your house down with you in it, but
I'm trying to figure out how long he's been actually killing. So it's before Fiona.
Really?
Evidence? Because he has a lot of boxes packed up and stacked up in his house.
But that seems like I got the impression that those were all the Chinese takeout boxes that he just doesn't ever throw away.
Really? They didn't have body parts in them?
Well, I mean,
the
movie,
way they were packed
the movie's
up,
lying
I thought,
to
but...
us if that's not his first kill. And
okay.
Like,
okay,
yeah,
that's fair.
I see what you're saying, but I just took that as just, you know, he's barely able to function as an adult.
Right.
Like, I mean, look at the way he interacted with people in the, you know, the planning meeting. Like, he just had no idea how to really genuinely act with people.
Did the cat and dog eat any of the body?
I wondered that myself.
There was a moment. He woke up and he looked around and everything. Now, I know this was him on his meds, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was to demonstrate, oh, look how fucked everything is. When you're on meds. But it also looked like there was maybe a trail and maybe like a little pool of blood in front of the dog. And
no, I think
that's
kind of
what animals do if you leave something
out. Well, that's the thing is, like, I felt so bad for the animals because so clearly this guy just confines them and
doesn't feed them.
Forgets to feed them, doesn't let them out, and they're just trapped in here with this maniac.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like this. Yeah, when he went on the meds. Mm-hmm. It was some bleak shit. Like, that head was gross, and you look around at his place, and oh my god! At the end, I was so tense. Like, with Anna Kendrick, like, why the fuck do you not walk away? This guy is acting really weird and sketchy about going back to his house, and you think it's a good idea to like pick the lock and go? Like, not that she deserved it, but like, my god, the alarm bells. Although, man, she really liked fucking this dude, I guess.
I suppose so.
You know, it's Ryan Reynolds after all.
Yeah. The other thing that I really liked is when he kills Fiona, and I forget, is it the cat or the dog that tells him he's got to go back and hide the body?
I think it's the cat, because the dog says you should go to the cops and tell them what had happened. You know, like it's a fucking story, but like, you know, you didn't really do quote unquote anything wrong. And the cat's like, you are so
they're going to lock you up.
Yeah,
they're going to fuck you in the ass.
This is a bunch of naive bullshit. You're going to. And the dog's like, no one's going to fuck you in the ass, Jerry.
Right, sure. But he goes back out to the woods and he sees, you know, her majestic beauty there laying on the ground. No blood.
Oh, yeah. No, you could see the wounds, but they were like bleached or like. It was really, really great.
It was. And then he takes the body away, and then it pans down. And I'm like, oh, they're going to show the one thing that's going to lead back to him. And they do. It's the shoe. It's the shoe. Then there's also just a pile of guts laying there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, okay, awesome.
I also thought there might be, like, I was starting to get like, oh, my God, they're going to go necrophilia with this, and I don't know. But because, like, I'm glad they didn't, because he seemed to be entirely too innocent to do something like that. But I'm glad, for whatever reason, I think that might have been, like, everyone's got their level of, like, how much creepy, weird shit they can put up with. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have sent me screaming over the edge. Yeah, I don't know. What else we have to talk about?
So, I thought one other scene that really, really didn't need to be there. When he and Anna Kendrick, I can't speak. Mm-hmm. Hook up for the first time.
Right.
I don't know why they showed the scene of them going to bed. They could have just, like, they come back the next morning and she's like, oh, that was amazing last night or whatever. Why put that, but like, 45-second scene in there at all?
I don't even remember it.
Yeah, it's a throwaway scene.
Yeah, it didn't.
I don't know why that was in there.
It didn't bug me, but yeah.
Sure. I mean, it didn't bug me because it's not that long, but it's just.
That's the other thing.
This
movie doesn't overstay its welcome. It's pretty tight, like hour 45.
Yeah.
So,
before the final song, it's pretty short, yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, like, that song kind of goes on forever. There is some really. I remember because I was finishing up my notes and doing some reading while the credits were rolling, and there was. I don't know if you did the same. But there was actually a song, I think, sung from the dog's point of view that also was kind of effective. I think if I were to make a fan cut of this, maybe I trim out the part that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely fade to black at the smoke. And then I throw the dog singing this kind of forlorn song over the credits. And then that's that movie becomes – it's flirting with being important.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, his movie comes so close to being, like, you know, in the Pontypool where it's like, you just fucking go watch it. It's a mind-blowing, amazing little movie, and it's, like, not quite at that level because there's just a few things that keep it off course.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
But I was really impressed with the project. And, you know, also I was impressed with the director who I cannot – I trained myself to, and now I'm drawing a complete blank of her name.
Yeah.
Anyway, Marjan. I was super impressed because this is like the first kind of like thing she's done full feature. And there was a lot of complicated shit. There's practical effects. There's all the core, you know, that Wes Anderson crazy choreography and design that like has to be just so for it to work. And man, smashed it.
Yeah.
Smashed it. Went from an animated thing based on her graphic novel to this. Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. I don't have much else to say about it. You?
Let me ask you about that final scene.
Okay. Are you talking about the dance number?
No, before. Well, yes, but before that as well. He goes to heaven?
Well, I mean...
Is this a delusion?
Gotta be, right? I like the cat and the dog going their separate ways. I thought that was pretty interesting. I kind of interpret it as his, like, you know, of course, I'm a secular atheist. I interpret it as his, like, last few minutes of consciousness as he's passing out due to carbon dioxide inhalation.
So he views himself as having gone to heaven.
I guess.
Why? I don't understand the heaven here. I would have thought, if anything, he would see himself as the dog sees him, as a horrible person who's not deserving of that.
I don't know. Like, I couldn't. I can't summon the theological argument.
Okay.
I mean, he's crazy, number one. Number two, there's this idea that death kind of atones for everything.
Death is the thing that atones for everything? Then how does anyone go to hell?
I don't know. That's this the old witness in me. Like, you know, if the wages that sin pay are death, then, like, you know, there's some things I think are logically consistent of the witness doctrine if you're going to believe in some stuff. And I always thought that was kind of nice and tidy, the fact that, like, there's essentially, you know, you die because you're a sinner. God can resurrect you, and he, in fact, the official witness doctrine is that he will resurrect everyone, and then you'll be given a chance to be placed back into the, because that's, you know, it's like a raw deal. It's like, well, Adam and Eve fucked me. I've got the sinful nature, and I'm warring against it. Why am I, I'm like,
sure, it's fundamentally
like, I want
unfair.
The clean slate they got.
Right.
And the witness doctrine is everybody gets that. They're going to restore Earth to paradise, and everybody gets resurrected, and then Satan will get the a brief period to tempt everyone, and anyone that makes a cataclysm. Clasmically stupid decision to follow Satan gets destroyed, and that's it. But, like, you know, you do get a clean. So, like, but then again, he wasn't. It'd have been super interesting if he was raised as Jehovah's Witness. Then this movie would have been 11 out of 10. But yeah, you know, that's why I'm thinking, like, maybe, like, if you die, then, you know, you're now at the same place that's everybody else. Why it's heaven. It's arguably better than Earth. You did him a favor. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It was dubious. The whole end
better,
of this movie is
if
dubious.
Heaven's better in every way than our existence on Earth, then, you know, I understand, like, suicide being a mortal sin, but it seems like people don't live their life with that conviction.
Okay.
I cling to life desperately. I don't ever want it to end.
I would love to know what our audience thinks at the end of this movie. Like, why the end of this movie is the way it is.
It's not a deal breaker. Like,
no,
I
it's
said,
not. It's definitely not. And there's something just kind of under the surface on this film where it's not as bubblegum as you think it's going to be. It's at the beginning. It's not as cavalier with mental illness as you think it's going to be at the beginning either.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly sympathetic to its main focus. And again, like, I don't, you know, hate him in, like, a evil serial killer way. It's more like just I feel profound pity for him. Like, I don't see how you could have gotten out of the situation you're put in, because it's just a raw deal, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got. You got anything else?
Nope.
We will be back probably next week although it's going to be tight, with Screamers. Have you seen it? 1995 science fiction movie?
No.
Starring RoboCop?
No.
All right.
Awesome.
Promises to be a B movie sci-fi to its core. So that'll be fun.
Sweet.
But we'll have that out. If you'd like to commission, also thanks again, Julie, two-time commissioner Julie Webster, for rocking my world twice with something completely unexpected. Thank you very much for that, and also for your support. If you would like to commission a podcast and help support Bald Move, it's pretty easy. You go to baldmove.com, hit shop. There's a lot of stuff out there for your consideration in the community queue, which are things where you can pitch in $10 at a time to have us pre-selected stuff. There's like still 12 Monkeys, Apocalypse Now, two of the Back to the Futures, Casablanca, lots of different stuff that's still available. And then also you can just grab the brass ring and pull down your own custom one. And you can find all that stuff at baldmove.com/shop. So thanks again, and we'll see you on the next one.